The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt in the ReliefFactor.com studio live today. I had a great sit down yesterday with Adam Laxalt, former Attorney General of Nevada. He's an old friend of mine. I've known Adam for, my gosh, 8 or 9 years now. And he's on California as well as he begins his challenge for United States Senate. He's a prohibitive favorite to go up against Cortez Mastro, I think her name is. It's the invisible senator. Nobody knows her in Nevada. I could have sat next to her and had dinner with her in D.C. 20 times and not known who she is. She got nothing done. And Adam Laxalt, of course, of the fabled grandson of Paul Laxalt, I should say, the fabled Senator Laxalt's grandson. Paul Laxalt was a giant, but people my age remember him, and people who are under the age of 40 don't. Paul Laxalt was a giant. Adam Laxalt is a genius. Guy is a Georgetown law grad, a Navy lawyer, former attorney general of the state. Made an unsuccessful bid for governor. For some reason, John Ralston hates him. I don't know why. But he's really quite a good guy, and he will be the 51st vote. Going to win Nevada. Going to turn the Senate back over to Leader Mitch McConnell's hands. I just tweeted out Adam Laxalt's website. Go over there and give him 10 bucks. He's one of the top three races. We got to win New Hampshire. Got to get Johnson into in that race. And then we need two more. And they come from a universe of three, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. In Georgia, I think Herschel Walker is going to be the nominee. In Arizona, I'm not sure. I think it'll be Mark Brnovich. I know it will be Adam Laxalt in Nevada, so I don't mind getting involved early. I think we'll hold on to Ohio. Hope we hold on to Pennsylvania. Believe we'll hold on to Missouri unless Eric Greitens is nominated, in which case we're going to have to pick up four seats because we're going to lose that seat. And maybe Pennsylvania. I'm a realist. I'm an objective. I just tell you the best candidate in Nevada is Adam Laxalt. When I don't know, and there are six great candidates like Ohio, I do what I'm going to do in Ohio, which is go moderate a debate and stay out of it. When you've got six great candidates, stay away. When you've got one prohibitive favorite like Adam Laxalt, I really would prefer for the others to pull out because Adam is going to be the nominee. Doesn't need to spend his money on a primary campaign. In Arizona, there are two or three people who are going to go through the finish line. It's a late August primary. I think Brnovich is probably the favorite, given that he's been a superb attorney general. In Georgia, I think Herschel's the prohibitive favorite, but I'm going to meet him, by the way, in October for the first time. On October 13th, I'm going down to the Atlanta History Center with Brian Westbury, the economist, Alfredo Ortiz, the head of the Job Creators Network, who is sponsoring the event, and Herschel. People don't really know how famous Herschel is in Georgia. If the guy had gone to Ohio State, he'd be president. But he didn't go to Ohio State. He went to Georgia. So he's going to be down there. Don't miss tomorrow, by the way. I'm going to have Doug LaMaurice on as we talk about the college football playoff podcast. Every Friday in the first hour, I do movies and sports because it's Friday. But today I got a lot of news. Number one, the FDA says if you're 65 or older, go get a booster. So I'm going to go get a booster tomorrow. It'll be 8 months tomorrow, and I'm going to go get a booster. Why? Because I don't want to get this. Like Pastor Jeffress said yesterday, why in the world would you want to run a risk? God has been miraculous in his grace through the agency of people of medicine and science. It's effectively wonderful. I think that would make the booster available for anyone who wants it, but of course the FDA being the FDA has to screw it up. But I'm 65, so I can go get it. I'm going to go get it tomorrow. I hope you do, too, if you've had your two shots. And if you haven't, I hope you go get your first one. The biggest story is in these two stories right here. New York Times. Biden huddles with Democrats as divisions threaten his agenda. They cannot agree. The squad runs the House. And the squad wants to spend $5 trillion and raise taxes to extraordinary heights. In the Senate, every Democrat needs to vote for this because not one Republican is going to vote for it. Not one. They're going to have to go back and amend the reconciliation bill that they had, the budget that they passed earlier, and amend the reconciliation instructions to include a debt hike. And Mitch McConnell made it clear again yesterday, they're not going to get one Republican vote along the way because they rolled the Republicans. And so they broke it. At the end of the New York Times, it says, Democrats across the ideological spectrum said forging a consensus was a tall order. We've got a hectic few days ahead, Representative Josh Gottheimer, a moderate from New Jersey, said after emerging from his negotiating session with Mr. Biden and the other lawmakers. Ha, they can only lose 4 votes in the House. They can't lose 1 vote in the Senate. And they have the crazy squad people. The crazies. They're just absolutely crazy. They, you know, they want to spend all of your money. And they want to forgive all of the college debt. They want to pay for everyone's college. And they want to give you a check instead. And so they don't want to compromise with anybody. And, you know, the sane Democrats like Joe Manchin are saying, you know, we're not going to do that. I got to get elected. And the moderate Democrats who actually don't want to lose their job in next fall's elections, which they will. Well, that leads to another headline. The Washington Post. Biden huddles with warring Democrats. Warring Democrats as party's agenda hangs in the balance. Because, you see, finally, elite media has figured out the Republicans aren't helping. If the government shuts down, it's the Democrats' fault. If the debt limit is exceeded and no more debt can be issued and the full faith and credit of the United States takes a ding, it's the Democrats' fault. The Democrats run everything. They're begging Mitch and the Republicans to help them, but they didn't listen to the Republicans when the Republicans said, do this or that, or a little bit of give here, a little bit of give there. No, they rolled them. So now they broke it. They bought it. CNN Politics. Anxious Democrats float Plan B. Raise the debt ceiling on a party line vote, which is exactly what I wrote in the Washington Post yesterday, and which is exactly what I spent most of yesterday's show saying needs to happen. And it just means Nancy Pelosi has to look up from her somewhat cloudy thinking and say, what do we need to do? And Jim Cooper says, well, we really ought to rewrite the budget bill and reopen reconciliation. They can do that. But as the roll call detailed, and I've tweeted out a link to this so you can read it, potential fallback for debt ceiling fraught with complications because reopening the fiscal 2022 budget resolution to add debt limit is possible, but it takes time, at least 4 weeks. We run out of money in the United States in 4 weeks. So Democrats have to get going right now, but they have to agree among themselves on what they have to get going on. Then they better hope that the so-called Section 304 resolution detailed in this story from Roll Call, which I posted over at Twitter, gets discharged from the budget committee. They better hope the majority, the parliamentarian of the Senate agrees with them, because they're just screwed because they rolled the Republicans. You got to be nice to the people you climb over on the way up the ladder because you may need their help staying up there. We're not going to help. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is rightly being hit with charges of racism. Why is it only the Haitian at the border are being turned back and bussed immediately back to their country and flown back to their country? Why just the Haitians? Why just the black people, Joe Biden? And the answer, of course, lies in the fact that he's befuddled and has no idea what's going on at the border. Now, Joe Biden did pledge to double U.S. donations of Pfizer vaccine for the poor countries out there, which is good. But he really ought to be out there focusing on a message of what's going on at the border. Secretary Mayorkas went to the House yesterday again. He had this exchange with Michael McCaul, who's the ranking Republican on Homeland Security, cut number 8.
I did not say that we are going to lose. That's unequivocally false, number one. And number two, we have not seen before such a rapid migration, irregular migration of individuals as we have observed and experienced with respect to the Haitians who've crossed the border in Del Rio, Texas. That has been an unprecedented speed.
But did you have any warning signs? When the sector chief is being warned about this, when the Panama foreign minister is warning on June the 3rd, and, here we are in September, months later. Did you see this coming?
Well, so we watched the flow of individuals who are seeking to migrate irregularly through Mexico from the Northern Triangle countries and further south. We do indeed track it. Nevertheless, Congressman, as I previously articulated, the speed with which this materialized is unprecedented.
He's more interested in saying irregularly migrated than in answering the question that, yeah, we were surprised. We're not very good at our job. Sorry. We're just lousy at this. Meanwhile, thousands of Haitians under the Del Rio Bridge, Joe Biden being accused of racism and the Democrats broken up. Pretty good Thursday. Pretty good Thursday when the Democrats cannot agree on anything. But get those people some help under the bridge. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined from Israel by Ambassador Michael Oren, formerly the Israeli ambassador to the United States. There's a headline in the Times of Israel today. Ex-ambassador, one said Michael Oren, calls for rethink on U.S. military aid amid Iron Dome controversy. It's a very winsome picture of a very stern-looking Michael Oren, but I'm upset, Mr. Ambassador. I'm upset because it refers to you as Oren, a noted academic and author, said that military aid to Israel being used increasingly as a tool against Jerusalem by left-wing Democrats. That's true, but it doesn't say Oren, a noted academic, author, and weekly guest on the Hugh Hewitt Show. So something's wrong with your PR strategy.
Or short story and novel writer.
That's
that
true. To those who call in,
grandfather of my sixth grandchild this week. Really?
Mazel tov. So I think this is a really important story. You are, because the left is only get stronger and these people are only get crazier. Tell people what you recommend it.
Well, I recommend that we sort of read the writing on the wall. In the article, I said it's a shot across a prow, and it's a very well-aimed one. Now, this is not going to be the end of this process. It's going to be the beginning of the process. And going back to the last presidential election, where you had candidates like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and even Pete Buttigieg getting up there and saying we should use aid as a way of sort of arm-twisting Israel, I began to think to myself, wait a minute. This aid is not as big a portion of our defense budget that it used to be. It had great significance when America was actually in the Middle East and fighting in the Middle East, not anymore. Can we afford to look weak? Can we afford to look like we're being extorted? And I don't think we can in our neighborhood. So I began to think maybe we should be rethinking the aid. Now, the aid packages that President Obama signed with Prime Minister Netanyahu is going to expire in a few years. And the question is, do we want to renew that type of arrangement, or should we move to a different type of arrangement in which the United States and Israel are really cooperating together in areas that are vital for our common security? That would be in our artificial intelligence, in cyber defense, many, many areas we can collaborate where America contributing to Israel's capabilities, and we're a world leader in all these fields, would actually redound to America's security benefit as well.
Well, I point out that the Chinese will probably be very happy to help you with Iron Dome, but I want to point out as well, the Iron Dome funding, which Democrats cut this week, is defensive funding. It protects Israel from terrorist rockets from the south and terrorist rockets from the north. Now, AOC, Rashid Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar, if they had a spelling bee, I'm not sure if any of them would win, but they're not very smart about the political optics. This is awful for the Democrats. And of course, many of the supporters of Israel, the handful that remain in the Democratic Party, instantly introduced a bill to make good on their Screw the Israel movement. But the message is sent, if they won't send you defensive weapons, you're not even going to get the blankets that Obama sent to Ukraine.
Look, as bad as it is for the Democrats, trust me, it's worse for the Palestinians.
Okay.
Because Iron Dome saves thousands, perhaps even tens of thousands of Palestinian lives. What would happen if Hamas, we didn't have Iron Dome, and Hamas is pummeling us with rockets every day, thousands of rockets, Israel would have no choice but to invade the Gaza Strip. And when you invade the Gaza Strip, you're going to kill thousands of people, maybe more. So Hamas, the Iron Dome not only saves Israeli lives, it saves a far greater number of Palestinian lives. And it says a lot about, you know, the squad, that they so hate Israel and so want to hurt Israel that they're willing to sacrifice thousands of Palestinian lives. That really is what they're about.
Let's talk about that, because you used the right word. Rashid Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and AOC, they don't dispute the policy. They simply hate Israel. And I mean, when they get unguarded, they put it out there. Why is the Democratic caucus indulging this?
Well, I don't know. There was a lot of legislative, I think, foul-ups there where they thought perhaps by putting this rider in there for the $1 billion for Iron Dome, they could get some Republican support for their budget bill, and it didn't work. And, you know, they'll probably get this bill passed in a different way, the $1 billion in a separate piece of legislation. All that's well and good, but this is the beginning of this process, Hugh, as I said, and I've seen it grow over the years. It's not getting back in the bottle.
I think we need to get the Republicans are going to vote against this budget bill, and then Democrats are going to say Republicans don't like Israel either, and that will be a lie because Republicans always support funding for Israel, but they'll try and do a false equivalent. This is different. This hardcore group are anti-Israel. Does Israel know that?
Yeah, not all Israelis understand that, and they understand that for the squad and others like them, it's not what we do; it's who we are. We're for their, you know, in their view, we're a white colonialist, racist state, and you know, we whatever we do, see, even if we created a Palestinian state tomorrow, they'd call it Palestinian washing. You know,
yeah,
we're great on gay rights; they call it pink washing. Everybody's washing because we're fundamentally bad, and nothing's going to change about that. You know, we got to remind your listeners all the time that overwhelming majority of American aid to Israel is spent in the United States. It's a subsidy for the American arms industry. So let the squad go to places in Alabama and places in Texas where they make these arms and say, guys, we so hate out of Israel that we don't really care about your jobs. You're going to be unemployed because of our crazy ideology.
They do. We didn't even get to the second story. Israel, U.S. said to discuss Plan B if Iran nuclear talks don't resume. Do you know what Plan B is, Michael Oren?
I know what I hope it is, and that is that the United States is going to back us when we do something.
Good. More on that next week. Ambassador Michael Oren, follow him at Dr. Michael Oren on Twitter. Follow me to the next hour of the Hugh Hewitt Show.
The lost secret notebook of Nikola Tesla with his most dangerous formulas could fall into the hands of evolutionary elite scientists.
His most amazing discoveries thought to be written in a lost journal. In the right hands, it could revolutionize the 21st century.
They want to start a new world order where elites rule and everyday people are not created equal.
Look out!
Now the elites plan to set off an earthquake under L.A. to take out world leaders.
There's an old brown battered notebook in my office at work. You have to find it, take it, and keep it hidden at all costs.
Let's just say there are a lot of enemies of the state interested in his research.
It's up to regular people to stop them. A grad student, a campus cop, a deaf army vet, and a group of live-action role players.
A vertical quake this size could collapse half of Dontop.
Catch Final Frequency, playing exclusively on SalemNow.com or download the mobile app. For more information, visit FinalFrequencyFilm.com.
Bonjour, hi, Kennedy. You're live on this Thursday. Joined by Florida Senator Rick Scott, chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, and the man is going to lead to the new majority returning to Leader McConnell's control at November 2022 elections. Good morning, Rick Scott. How are you?
Good morning. I think Joe Biden he must be on our payroll because everything he's doing is disgusting the voters in this country.
He is absolutely a wrecking ball.
Whatever.
He is a wrecking ball. I had a chance to spend a couple of hours yesterday with Adam Laxalt, who's an old friend of mine, and I sat down with Attorney General Laxalt, the former Attorney General of Nevada. He says he's in Nevada. That makes me happy. That puts that on the board in a real way. Do you agree with me that Nevada's in play?
Absolutely. Stop and think about it this way. Cortez Masto only won by 2% 4 years ago. She's not distinguished herself. She's not done anything to help the country or Nevada. And Adam Laxalt's well-known, a successful attorney general. We have other people in the race there, too. But if you look at the generic ballot in this country in the battleground states, we're way up. So I think we're going to have a big win in Nevada.
Now, Senator Cortez Masto, I asked Adam's friend, Mike, who was with him, to show me a picture of her. I may have sat next to her in a restaurant. I've never seen her on TV. I haven't seen her in Washington. As far as I know, she's an illusion. Is she actually got anything done in the United States Senate?
I don't know anything she's done. I never see her. I never hear from her. You know, my first 2 years when we were in the majority, I've had to preside over the Senate a few hours a week. I never saw her talk.
Do you see?
So I don't know what she does.
I've got a list of four where we've got to take the seat.
One is New Hampshire, two is Georgia, three is Arizona, four is Nevada. And they're all in the top tier. We've got to take each of those seats while we defend Pennsylvania and Ohio and Missouri. How do you feel about the magnificent seven seats, Senator Scott?
I think we're going to get them, and here's why. In Arizona, it's still a Republican state. We have four good candidates already in. I still think Doug Ducey will get in the race next year. And Doug won his last race in 2018 by 15 points. But I think any one of these five individuals will beat Mark Kelly. We're doing everything we can to explain he is not a moderate. He votes 100% of the way, exactly how Chuck Schumer says. In Georgia, Raphael Warnock is a Marxist. I mean, he's the Doug Jones of this cycle. There's no way he should win, and I don't think he will win. We've got great people in this race. Herschel Walker just got in the race, who looks like he's in the lead right now in our primary. We've got a Navy SEAL, Latham Sadler. We've got a businessman and veteran, Kelvin King. We've got the Ag Commissioner, Gary Black. We've got great candidates in. We will win. I think Adam Laxalt, or we've got two other people in the race, Captain Sam Brown and businesswoman Sherelle Mendenhall in that race. We will win there. Everybody that knows Chris Sununu, give him a call. The public polls show Chris would win by 8 points. So,
wow. Given the way that polling tilts Democrat, that means he'd win by double digits going away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Hassan is already so worried. She already has put a television ad up now. I mean, think about it. She only won by 1,000 votes 4 years ago. And she has not done anything to distinguish herself. And Chris Sununu has been a wonderful governor. Now they have a Republican legislature. This state is going to go Republican. And I think it'll be Chris Sununu. He has not told me he's going to run, but I hope he does.
Now, Senator, I'm going over to Ohio in a couple of weeks to moderate a debate among six great Republican candidates. And I mean every one of them. Matt Dolan just got in the race. He's a good guy. I know them all. And I know Tim Ryan is a formidable Democrat. I don't get involved in contested primaries where any of the six can win. I'm going to endorse Adam Laxalt because he's my friend. I know he's going to win. Georgia, I don't know yet. I will be behind Chris Sununu. I'm not getting involved in Arizona. Tell me a little. I know Mark Brnovich very well, though, and I think he's ahead right now. But tell me a little bit about Ohio, because with six great candidates and six big piles of money, the danger there is that they set the house on fire and Tim Ryan arrives with the fire truck.
Well, here's what's great. Tim Ryan has an opponent. She's a Bernie Sanders supporter, Morgan Harper. All right. So Tim Ryan's not going to be able to run a race. He's not a moderate. He's a far lefty, but he's not going to be able to run a race as a moderate. And we have wonderful people. I mean, we've got great candidates on our side. One of them will get through the primary, and they're going to win the general election here. It's a Republican state. Tim Ryan and whether it's Tim Ryan or Morgan Harper, they're going to be defined so far towards Bernie Sanders. There's no way they will win in Ohio.
Now, you know, I've known Tim for 30 years. He and I went to the same Roman Catholic high school. Are you going to try and elect the socialist? Because it's pretty hard to paint Tim as a radical AOC member of the squad. He started a quarterback at Youngstown State. That's not really where the Marxist gathers.
He votes with Nancy Pelosi. If you look at this, if you look around the country, the Democrats, they vote with Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi would not get elected statewide in Ohio.
100%. And in Georgia, you really do have a Marxist with Raphael Warnock. It's just that there are different kinds of Democrats, and some are easier to beat than others. I don't know where Cortez Mastro is, because I have no idea what she does. She's invisible.
Well, she votes wherever Chuck Schumer tells her to do.
Now, Senator, that brings me to the key thing. I wrote in the Post yesterday that not one Republican would support the budget that's coming over with a debt hike attached. They will not support a debt hike relief standing alone. They won't vote for a debt hike ceiling. If the Democrats broke it, they bought it. They need to fix it with a new budget amendment. Is that your position?
Absolutely. They have Democrats have the White House, the House, and the Senate. Right? They don't want any of our involvement with all their radical spending, which we shouldn't be. And so if they want to raise the debt ceiling, they want to do it on their own. You know why? They've been very clear. They don't want to do the debt ceiling on their own because they know it's toxic. They don't want to act like it is. They say, we want you to be part of our what we're doing here. But, you know, what they really want to do is they want to suspend it so they never have to talk about how much it is. You know, their budget in this deal, the $3.5 trillion, which is really $5.5 trillion, will take our debt to $45 trillion. Now, let's look at what's happening to families right now with inflation. It's hurting our poorest families. It's hurting our families on fixed income. And the Democrats are causing all this with their spending, and they don't want to be responsible for it. They are responsible for what's going on.
And so do you think you'll keep, for example, you've got to get Senator Murkowski reelected, and I hope you do. I think she's a good, solid vote on 99% of the stuff that we vote on. Will she and any other Republican think about bolting and voting for it? Because it will hurt them. It will really hurt them if they vote for any Democratic
package. I don't think anyone's going to vote for it. We have a clean continuing resolution that McConnell and Richard Shelby put together that will deal with, we're not going to do the debt ceiling. That's the Democratic responsibility. We'll keep the government open. We will help with the Afghan refugees, and we'll also help with the disaster relief for Louisiana. So ours is clean, all right? But the Democrats don't want to do it. I don't know if we'll even get a vote on it. So the Democrats might shut down government. I don't think they will, but they could decide to shut down government.
But then the legacy media will say the Republicans have shut down government. That's not true. Democrats are going to make the choice to shut down government if they attach a debt ceiling hike.
There was a poll that came out yesterday that if people understand that it's the Democrats that have all the power up here. So typically, you're right. People want to say, oh, it's always the Republicans. No. I mean, we've been very clear. This is something the Democrats can do by themselves. They're doing the spending by themselves. They can raise the debt ceiling by themselves. So they'll make a decision.
It's called a Section 304 petition that needs to go to the Budget Committee. It takes about 3 to 4 weeks to amend the budget so that they can do new reconciliation instructions and add back in the debt limit. Have they even begun? Or are they sitting around their hands again, frozen by the Biden incompetence machine?
Well, we had the beginning of back in before we took the recess in August, where we had the Voterama, where they started the budget process, and they can do this. They can do this through reconciliation. It will we'll have another opportunity to do amendments. That will explain where Republicans are and where Democrats are. Maybe we'd get something done. But the Democrats can do this on their own. They don't want the American public to understand. They are voting to raise the debt to $45 trillion. That's what they're doing.
Wow. Wow. Will the full faith and credit of the United States be compromised because of Democratic inactivity?
It's up to the Democrats. I mean, we have a variety of bills. I have a bill with Pat Toomey, the full faith and credit. We say we will not default, but we're gonna prioritize our spending. We'll take care of our veterans, our seniors, and we'll make sure we pay our interest. I've got a bill that says going forward, we're not going to keep doing this. So it's going to take a 2/3 vote every time you have a bill that has deficit spending. But the Democrats want to do nothing to fix this. They want to keep spending money to oblivion.
And where do people go if they want to contribute to the efforts to retake the Senate, Senator?
It's NRSC.org. We had 174,000 donations last month. People are on our side. They want to get a majority Republican in the U.S. Senate.
NRSC.org. Senator Rick Scott of Florida, thank you, Senator, Chairman of the NRSC. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, inside the Relief Factor Studio Live. Representative Ken Buck is an old friend of mine. He represents Colorado's 4th Congressional District, and he announced he's running for re-election, so he's going to be running for some district in Colorado. We just don't know which one because the maps aren't out. Good morning, Congressman Buck. How are you?
I'm doing great. You, how are you?
Good. It's always good to talk to you. I see you occasionally on airplanes and around town. What do you make of the map process? It's a funky one. I was just talking about redistricting with Mike Pompeo and Chris Christie. They're running the National Republican Redistricting Trust. How's it going in the Centennial State?
Well, I think, it's going well. We gained a seat, so we went from 7 congressional seats to 8 congressional seats. They have floated a few different maps, and they're coming down to sort of a consensus on the commission on a particular map. It puts me in basically the same district I had before. They had to create an 8th district, and so they came up from the Metro Denver area north to Greeley, which is sort of my home base, and they're putting that in the 8th. So that hurts a little bit, but I think overall they probably did about as good as they could do.
Now, does it? What's the delegation split now? 4-3?
It is 4-3. So for 6 years out of the 10 years of this cycle, Mike Kaufman was the Republican, and the Republicans had a 4-3 advantage. Jason Crow beat Mike Kaufman two elections ago, and so the Democrats now have a 4-3 advantage. And it looks with these maps that the Democrats will probably have a 5-3 advantage, although one seat, this new 8th congressional seat, will be a pretty competitive seat.
Anybody you know lining up to take a shot at that from the good guys?
I don't yet. I haven't ruled that out, but I don't, because I haven't seen the final map of what whether I'm going to be in the 4th or the 8th. But I don't know whether there are other people starting to line up. I think no one's going to really poke their head up until we know exactly where the lines are.
Last question on this, Congressman. When does it settle? I mean, this is hard to run a campaign when you don't know the lines are.
Yeah, and as you know, North Carolina lines changed as recently as 3 years ago, and so did the Florida lines 4 years ago. So you're never really sure when the lines are going to settle. We're supposed to get a final map and a conclusion by the commission by mid-October. The Supreme Court, Colorado Supreme Court, has promised to finish all the challenges to the maps by December 15th, but then the federal lawsuits start. So it's really very difficult for anyone interested in running for office to make a determination based on the maps.
Yeah, you know, these independent commissions, I hate them. I think they're unconstitutional. I just talked about that with Governor Christie and Secretary Pompeo, but it's nothing we can do about it today. Let's talk about the House. First and foremost, not one Republican should vote for the continuing resolution. Do you agree with me?
I do, yes.
Why?
I can tell you this Republican will not be voting for the continuing resolution. Look, it spends too much money. It has the debt ceiling extension in there. There are the Iron Dome issue was just an absolute cheap shot. There are a number of reasons not to vote for it. Really what it comes down to is that the Democrats under Pelosi continue to run the most partisan House that I've seen in my time in Congress and that I can remember in my lifetime. And you can't keep running a partisan operation like that and never reach across the aisle, never try to work with people and expect to get Republican votes.
Now, Congressman, they got a 4-seat majority in the House, which is the smallest ever, and they have a no-seat majority in the Senate. They need the vice president. And yet they're proposing basically to bring in socialism to the United States. Has that not caught the attention of, quote, moderate Democrats from Colorado who are allegedly Tim Bennett's supposed to be, Senator Bennett is supposed to be a moderate. Jason Crow's supposed to be a moderate. How are they voting for this stuff?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't understand. And it has been, it isn't as if this is the first year that we've seen this. This is really creeping socialism. And they continue to push year by year, election cycle by election cycle, to bring more and more control under the federal government and spending under the federal government. And I think we are seeing entitlements dramatically increase, and we're seeing the deficit dramatically increase. And I agree that no Republican should be voting for this, and hopefully we'll get some Democrats moving over. And certainly Joe Manchin has talked about the price tag on the $3.5 trillion is being too high, and so is Senator Sinema. And so I hope in the Senate, on the Senate side, we get that. On the House side, there's a lot more discipline in the on the Democrat side, and Nancy Pelosi is known for exacting revenge if people stray.
But I thought Jason Crow was a friend of Israel. I thought you had some alleged friends of Israel, and they stripped out Iron Dome financing yesterday.
Well, I was surprised. Josh Gottheimer from New Jersey and Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida. There were a number of people who voted for that really stunned me. I couldn't believe it, not just based on their constituencies, but based on their past.
Well, tell me what you think will be the key issue in your race. You're on judiciary. I'm not sure what you consider to be the redistricting is part of judiciary's portfolio. But what do you think matters most to Coloradans based upon what your committee does?
Well, I'm on the immigration subcommittee, and certainly what's happening at the border is a huge issue for folks in Colorado. Putting stress on our education system, our healthcare system, our criminal justice system, you name it. And that's going to be a big issue where I'm from. I'm also on the antitrust subcommittee, and we are fighting against big tech and doing our very best to create competition in the marketplace so that Facebook and Amazon and Apple and Google have some competition and consumers have some choice.
You know, there are a couple of different competing models on what to do about big tech. I'm one of the people that believes you dispossess them of the data that they stole from people by requiring them to pay for it. Other people want to make them a public utility. Other people want to use antitrust to break them up. I'm not a fan of that. What's the Ken Buck solution?
Well, I don't think we break them up with antitrust, but I do think we encourage competition with antitrust. And I agree with you. I think that when I go on to Google, which I don't, but if I go on to Google and conduct a search, that data is my data, and I should be able to determine whether that data goes with me, just like my cell phone number goes with me from one cell phone company to another. I think that my data should be able to go where I search, and the decision to sell that data to advertisers is my decision, not the search company's decision.
It seems to me that search functions profit a company, and that profit ought to be divided with the people that power the search function, which are those who provide the AI to the company, so that there ought to be a rebate. And once you start getting people in on it, it's like a Visa card. If they're going to use 100% of your data, you got to get 3% of the money they make back or something like that. Is there anything inventive? It's a bipartisan issue. People don't like their data being collected.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bipartisan issue. And yes, one of the bills that we have, and it's getting traction in the Senate also, it came out of the Judiciary Committee in markup and will go to the floor hopefully sometime in October or November, is what we call portability, which is the same idea as this cell phone number being moved from one cell phone company to another. But if you own that data and there are four or five different search engines that want to compete for your data, you're going to start to see that kind of rebate. It could be in the form of airline miles or hotel points, or it could be just flat cash back to the consumer based on the ability to for the search engine to market that. But you also have the ability for the search to tell the search engine, I don't want anybody to know what I'm searching for. I don't want anybody to know where my location is. And you should have that privacy right also.
Well, I hope that you're in the chair of a subcommittee when oversight begins under a Republican majority and Speaker McCarthy. Last question, Ken Buck, are you certain that reconciliation will have to be amended to allow the debt ceiling? Because there's a way the Democrats can do it on their own. It takes 4 weeks, but we should not help them. Do you think that's what's going to happen?
Well, I think it is most likely to happen that way, because I don't think that Republicans in the Senate are going to help. They certainly aren't going to give them 10 senators to get this done. And as a result, I think that they're going to have to use reconciliation, and they're going to have to start that process pretty soon.
Amen. If they don't, we're going to default, and it's up to the Democrats. They've got their hands on the wheel. They have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. Republicans are sitting on the sidelines saying, you screwed us. We're not going to help you twice. Ken Buck, good to talk to you again, friend. Don't go anywhere, America. Megyn Kelly and more coming up on The Hugh Hewitt Show this Thursday a.m.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at SalemPodcastNetwork.com.
Blood on my hands, and I don't understand what's happening.
Welcome back, America. That is John Androzic of Five for Fighting with his new single, Blood on My Hands. I'm going to go see John in concert this weekend. That single has now been viewed 300,000 times on YouTube, although it's been blacked out by the mainstream media. Five for Fighting, of course, the owner of many platinum hits, including Superman, 100 Years, etc. But they don't want to play John's song because it's critical of President Biden, General Milley, and Secretary of State Blinken. I'm joined by Megyn Kelly, who knows a little bit about being blacked out by media. Good morning, Megyn. How are you?
Hi, Hugh. I'm great. How are you?
Good. How's the podcast thriving? You're still among the most listened to people in America.
It's doing very well. And now we're live on Sirius XM between 12 and 2 p.m. We're sort of doing the podcast live. So that's been super fun.
Excellent. Now, tell me one thing. Are you a fan of John Androzic? Do you know about his music?
Yes. Yes, he's amazing. That song is absolutely haunting. And I'm not surprised one bit it's getting zero play from the mainstream.
They sent out a press release yesterday talking about the song's origin to more than 3,000 media outlets, including Rolling Stone. Not one story. It's a blackout, Megyn Kelly.
You know, I heard him, he was talking to Glenn Beck, and Glenn was making a good point of, since when did rock and roll become about doing and saying what the man wants you to, right? Hasn't it always been a middle finger to the man? And that's exactly what he's doing, but because the man in charge right now happens to be a Democrat, the media is blocking him out. They're not interested in his message. So if for all of their performance art, trying to pretend that they were horrified about what happened in Afghanistan, as soon as they had the chance to turn the page on that story, they did. And they're not interested in anything that's going to take us back to it.
And I firmly believe if the rules that are in place now about not criticizing presidents have been in place when Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young wrote to Ohio, it wouldn't have gotten any airplay. But now it's changed because of the Democrat in the White House. I hope you join me in continuing to give attention to Blood on My Hands. Megyn, I want to do something now that I regret doing. I've always liked David Frum. He used to be a fairly nice and influential person. He's been disintermediated from influence by Donald Trump because he went crazy. I mean, he literally went nuts. Now, you and I both have Trump tattoos. And so I can show them off. I can proudly stand up with those people who can line up in the media who've been assaulted by Donald Trump verbally and who've lived to talk about it and laugh it off. David was kind of knocked off the balance beam. He's attacked you this week as being an anti-vaxxer. Now, I think you actually support vaccines like I do. I'm vaccinated. I get to get my booster tomorrow. I am going to applaud when my grandchildren get vaccinated because their mother has done a study of it and they're safe and qualified for it. And two out of the three of them will be eligible for it. Why is David Frum attacking you wrongfully, libelously, really, as an anti-vaxxer, which is almost slander per se in our business?
It's kind of amusing to me. I'm definitely not an anti-vaxxer. I've said repeatedly that I'm pro-vaccine. I've gotten it. My husband's gotten it. And I think everyone who wants it should get it, but I don't like these mandates, and I really don't like them for children. And I've said publicly, I have three kids, not one of whom is yet eligible for the vaccine, but I did lose my dad to a heart attack at age 45, and I have a heart issue, and I worry about my children and their hearts because they've got a genetic predisposition to some frailty there. So I'm watching the myocarditis thing very carefully, and this should be a decision between their pediatrician, my husband, and me. And it shouldn't be forced on them by Joe Biden or anybody else, Dr. Fauci. And there's a reason that the folks in Europe have made a different decision. Our friends in the UK are not requiring 12 to 15-year-olds to get this. And even when they get to be older, you know, 16, they're only requiring one shot, which because all of the myocarditis seems to be happening after the second shot. Okay, so these are the considerations by people we don't consider insane, our friends across the pond. So David Frum tweets out the other day when the Pfizer report breaks that Pfizer, the manufacturer of the vaccine, is saying they've had a robust immune response in 5 to 11-year-olds, and they think it's safe. And they had no myocarditis so far, but they only tested 2,200 kids, and those side effects tend to be 1 in 5,000. So they're not yet at the numbers where they would show up anyway. So he tweets out, we ought to force these vaccines on all of the, quote, anti-vaxxers and learn from our mistakes. The stigma that comes with shaming the anti-vaxxers is what it's all about, is essentially what he said, and that they're right, that that's a big part of it. So we should start shaming them and mandate this as soon as it gets emergency use authorization. And I tweeted back to him, you do not have to be an extremist anti-vaxxer, however he phrased it, to have some concerns about vaccinating a little when the virus poses very low risk to them, and we're not yet sure about these vaccines. There's been no long-term testing. That's what had him label me an anti-vaxxer. I laughed because if you just go back and listen to my show, you'll hear me all the time promoting the vaccine. But this is the lunacy of those who have just lost their minds when it comes to these vaccines.
It's performance tweeting. And I really do believe a lot of performance tweeting comes from those who have been disintermediated from influence. And sometimes from the American Enterprise Institute and other places where they used to hang their hat and are now charity cases at Jeff Goldberg's pleasure. And so I read yesterday another thing that David said. So I thought I would just run this off. Matt Lewis, a friend of mine, he went on Matt Lewis's podcast, which is typically pretty good. And he said, David did, the Republican Party is an elderly party. It's a party of people with chronic health problems. One of the things that was true in 2016, if you found a county where there's a lot of obesity and drug abuse, that's where you had a lot of Trump votes. He went on, there is something compensatory, I think, about this cult of physical prowess. It's people who at some level feel physically weak. There are all these weirdly homoerotic fan images of Trump. Trump can't lift a glass of water, can't walk down a ramp, hasn't done any meaningful physical exercise ever in his life. The idea that you would make this a fetish about him, it says something about your doubts and your needs. You know, this is weird, Megan. This is just weird.
Homoerotic. Do we have to go back to the Obama days and talk about how the media feted him? I mean, please, don't get me started. But I love when I hear people like him write like that or say things like that, because they've dropped the veil altogether. This is what they think about the right half of the country. Meanwhile, on the vaccine front, which is what he's really railing on, there are large portions of the African-American community that do not want this vaccine for very good reasons. They don't tend to be Trump sycophants. How does he explain that? And to dismiss all Republicans as old white guys who are having homoerotic fantasies about Donald Trump, I'll tell you, 2 weeks ago I was down in Houston with Dan Crenshaw with a Crenshaw Youth Summit, and there were thousands of excited young conservatives, black, white, Latino, you name it. This is a guy who hasn't left New York City in a very long time and thinks the rest of the country is just like them, voted 87% in Manhattan for Biden.
I had Pastor Robert Jeffress on yesterday so that he would endorse the vaccine, which he has done, because he's a big Trumpy pastor. I mean, he's a very strong supporter of the former president, but he is also a big supporter of the vaccine. I believe in persuading the vaccine hesitant by a patient-educated argument as to its benefits and why the benefits far outweigh the risks for almost everybody. You do have to consult your doctor if you've got an underlying condition. And I am, however, I'm not a 100%er. I think mask mandates for preschoolers are insane. And I think if a parent says my child has a speech problem, they ought to be allowed to dispense with the mask completely, because speech cannot improve if they cannot speak clearly and if they often don't see the teacher. So there are some gradations here. And I think the people that are full on, well, extremists like David, it's not really about the vaccine. It's about performance art so that people will pay attention to them again.
And control. That's one of the things I hate about the masks. I am definitely more rabid on the anti-masks for children thing than I am on the vaccines. I've got three kids. They sit in class all day long, nine hours with masks on. Just last week, my 11-year-old was forced to be outside doing squat thrusts and planks and sit-ups and push-ups in a mask outside. Oh, he said the boys were sweating through their masks. This is absurd. The CDC did a study on kids in Georgia, 90,000 of them, 90,000. David Zweig in New York Magazine wrote about it. And what the CDC found was that masks were not a factor in preventing COVID, that they did nothing. Why hasn't that study been everywhere? Because it doesn't fall into this narrative of, like, we all have to wear the masks. It's our social responsibility. Maybe not. Certainly not with the young ones. It hasn't proven to be an effective means of mitigation. And yet the hand of big government is across my 8-year-old's face all day, while AOC can go to the Met Gala without hers on. These Hollywood celebrities can go to their Emmy Awards without theirs on. Oh, but vaccination. Okay. All the kids, K through 12, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, California, vaccinated or not, they have to sit there all day with those things, those muzzles across their face. I've had it with the masks.
Well, I think this is why Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins, both of whom are welcome guests on this show, are losing credibility by the gallon, because parents who are living the day-to-day, and my daughter and you have the same issue, their kids do not do well with masks. They ought not to be mandated. It ought to be a parental choice issue. We will see what we will see. Let me close quickly, Megan. I had on Governor Christie and former Secretary of State Pompeo earlier today because they're heading up the National Republican Redistricting Trust. And I asked if the next time they'd be together would be on a debate stage. And they laughed and, of course, diverted from the question. Do you think the Presidential Debate Commission should be abolished?
I do, actually, because, I mean, you look around last time and it was all Democrats and never Trumpers. So Trump at that time, he wasn't wrong that the system was rigged against him. I mean, in many ways, but the Presidential Debate Commission, there wasn't somebody who was open-minded to Trump on there. And that's the risk. And I don't really understand what function it serves when we could have such alternate approaches to this. You know, I know Trump last time around suggested Joe Rogan do a debate. Now, I personally wouldn't support that, even though I like Joe Rogan. I do think he's admitted he's not fact-based, right? He's just sort of, he throws stuff at a wall. I think you do need people who are fact-based to tee up the questions. But why do we rely on these guys who are about 200 years old to randomly pick, you know, a few sort of select journalists, all of whom tend to be biased against the GOP, to run the national conversation?
I can do it in 5 minutes. Way. I could get Eddie Glaude and Megyn Kelly. I could have Rachel Maddow and Hugh Hewitt. I could get Guy Benson and Mary Catherine Hamm and a couple of lefties, and we would have a great time, and it's just time to get rid of the septuagenarian, octogenarian debate commission. Megyn Kelly, always good to talk to you on Sirius FM from noon to 2. Just please don't move to the mornings.
No, I won't. All right. We got that worked out between us.
All right. Good. Good deal. Megyn Kelly, always a pleasure. Listen to her on Sirius. ReliefFactor.com is my great sponsor. They're here every single day, 3 times a day. Why? Because if you're going to exercise today, it'll be better if you use ReliefFactor.com. And if you're just sitting around like I am today, I'm going to go have lunch. I'm going out with Billy, the former lifeguard, who's had a lot of cutting and scraping on his bones. I got to tell him, ReliefFactor.com. I might take him a bag of it, although the cheap son of a gun never buys lunch. I'll buy lunch, so I probably won't give him ReliefFactor.com. But you ought to do it. $19.95, 3-week starter pack. Try it. See if your aches and pains that come with exercise and aging do not let up. See if it works for you. If it doesn't, don't renew. If you do, however, like me, fine. It's the only supplement I take. It's the only supplement I've ever taken, except for a vitamin, which I've taken even longer than ReliefFactor.com. Then stick with it. Your life will be better for it. Coming right back, America. Don't go anywhere. The Hugh Hewitt Show rolls merrily along with Roger Marshall. Senator Marshall, Dr. Marshall, and I talk vaccines right after this. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live today on this Thursday, joined by Dr. Roger Marshall, who is also Senator Roger Marshall, representing the great state of Kansas. Good morning, Senator Marshall. Good to have you on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hugh, good morning. Thanks for having me back. We've got a lot to talk about today.
We do. I just talked with Megyn Kelly about vaccine mandates. She and I are both already vaccinated. I'm going to go get my booster tomorrow. I'll be eligible tomorrow. I'm a big fan of vaccine mandates. I believe the military ought to be vaccinated, but you're going to bring a bill that I think also makes sense. I think common sense ought to rule the day on this. Tell us about your bill.
Yeah, Hugh, again, like you, I've been vaccinated. My parents are vaccinated. I'm pushing every senior to consider getting that booster shot as well. But what is happening right now in the military is they are separating soldiers who are refusing the vaccine. And what our bill would do is keep them from giving them anything except an honorable discharge. And the White House last night exploded against this. The White House says, oh, no, they're going to get a dishonorable discharge. There's going to be a showdown at the OK Corral over this one. And just lastly, I'll say I'm just so disappointed the CDC will not acknowledge natural immunity, because half of these soldiers have, maybe more, have natural immunity. I'm told that our National Guards, that less than half of those soldiers, the enlisted people I'm talking about, are vaccinated. So this is about to be a national security crisis.
Now, Dr. Marshall, I have been very, very, very vocally pro-vaccine from the beginning. I am pro-booster. I am pro-everyone. And I wanted mandates for the military and for anyone who works for a state government, because it's the right of the state to require people. But there are legitimate concerns among young people about the enlarged heart. It's not a big risk, but it's a little risk. And therefore, they might choose not to receive the vaccine. I do not understand a dishonorable discharge, because it's a new vaccine requirement that is coming after they enlisted, when there wasn't a vaccine requirement. What is the White House's beef? Because this is extremism that, in fact, hurts the vaccination effort.
Hugh, I don't understand their beef, except to say that this is their culture, right? They're socialist. And if you look at the White House, how many of these folks actually have military experience outside of, you know, the Secretary of Defense, I think, and, of course, General Milley? So I think they just don't understand the culture of the military. But just to push back a little bit on the vaccine mandate part of this, the incidence of pericarditis for an 18-year-old male from this shot is 50 out of a million, versus the chance of them being hospitalized from COVID is 5 out of a million. So we're not talking about, you know, hepatitis, or which is life-threatening for an 18-year-old, or yellow river fever or whatever it is, which is life-threatening to an 18-year-old. So as a physician, I always want to step there and weigh the benefits of the risk. So what are the benefits of this vaccine to an 18-year-old? Very minimal. What are the risks? They're significant. And I respect these younger people not getting the vaccine. You and I, we need the vaccine. Our parents need the vaccine. They need the booster shot. But do young 18-year-old men and women need this vaccine that are otherwise healthy? I think there's plenty of room for argument on that.
And doctor, my response, I'm not a doctor, you are, but I have talked to Fauci and Collins about this. My response is that the number one job of the American military is to be ready at a moment's notice to defend the United States. And if even one of the members of the military or the logistical support train of, say, a SEAL team that needs to go abroad and rescue American is compromised by COVID, that's one too many. And that, therefore, it's one of, and they're also transmitters of the virus to seniors, and they may not know it. It's not because of them. It's not because they're at risk of it. But I do understand the heart issue and the level of risks and benefits. So I wouldn't hurt them, but I would mandate it. So we have a disagreement. That's a political disagreement. But there's no messaging disagreement. Punishing people for disagreement is, in fact, counter-effective in getting people to get the vaccine. That's my point.
You nailed it, Hugh, as usual. You've nailed it. And my last point here, it's just great. This is a professional argument, discussion that people should have, is if the military would acknowledge, and the CDC acknowledged, natural immunity, which is even better than the vaccine, then that's going to eliminate half of this argument. If a third of our enlisted people get kicked out of the military over the next week or two with a dishonorable discharge, it's going to be a domino of problems. We're not going to have anybody to send with that SEAL team, right?
Yeah, I just do not understand why it has to be a dishonorable discharge. I don't think the numbers are going to be large. I do believe in the mandate, but I just do not understand punishing someone in America because they did not sign up. It's an all-volunteer army, and they wouldn't have volunteered if this mandate was there. That's clear. And it is it's called mutatis mutandis. I'm a lawyer. Changed circumstances. And so are you going to get any Democrats to agree with you on this bill?
You know, we're going to find out. I sure hope we can. Somehow we got to get it to the floor. We're circulating among Democrats now, and we'll see if we get any takers.
The rule of reason. If everyone would just go with the rule of reason and be calm about this, the country would be well on its way to having COVID in the rearview mirror. Dr. Senator Marshall, always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on today.
You bet, Hugh. Great discussion. Enjoy your show. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I hope all of you enjoyed the show as well. We're going to post Megyn Kelly. We're going to post the audio of Senator Marshall. We're going to post a transcript of Mike Pompeo and Chris Christie joining with me on the Hugh Hewitt Show earlier today. Lots today in the rearview mirror, but you should have in the front view mirror being back tomorrow. Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Adam. Thank all of you for listening to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.